Welcome to Nerdsplain It, the bridge between comics and fans. My name is House. I am joined by my two cohorts, my two cape crusaders. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Jessica.
And this is Greg.
How are you guys doing today? What's been going on?
Pretty good, man. Not a whole lot. Living life, living the dream down here in Florida. How about yourself?
Nice, nice. Freezing cold in St. Louis, Missouri. Jess, how are you doing today?
Good. I'm super excited. We've been working on this for months, and yes, we're finally recording the first episode.
Yes.
So I'm a mixture of excited and...
Terrified?
Terrified.
I think all three of us are in that same boat. So without further ado, why don't we just jump right in both feet? Let's just dive right into this. Everybody listening today is probably wondering, what does Nerdsplain It mean? Jess, you coined the term Nerdsplain It. What does it mean to nerdsplain?
It's basically one nerd explaining to another nerd, or you could say non-nerd, of all things comics that is, you know, welcoming and friendly and approachable, because the comic book culture has been known to shun newcomers, and we want to open up that door and welcome new people in and help explain to those who already know comics things that they may have not known. So we're here to explore and explain. And nerdsplain.
And nerdsplain. I like it. Greg, you're a bit of a newcomer when it comes to comics. You're just dipping your toes in the water a little bit. What does nerdsplain mean to you? Like, what benefit can you get out of, as well as the rest of our listeners who don't necessarily have a whole lot of either experience reading or a whole lot of access reading comics? What does it mean to you?
Yeah, so for me, now, with our listeners, there may be a lot of listeners that are like me, where they've always been interested in comic books, movies, and, you know, that source material. But for me personally, I haven't taken the time to read comics. Not that I didn't want to do it. It's just more along the lines of I didn't want to make time for it. But I'm familiar with, you know, the mainstream Supermans, the Batmans, the Spider-Mans, and all that good stuff. But in terms of, like, the history behind them, the deep knowledge and information that goes along with those characters, I may not know too much about. So when I go to the movies, I enjoy the movies. You have a lot of people who are knowledge in all that information, and they say, oh, well, the movie sucked. Well, why did it suck? Oh, because they didn't follow the source material, or, you know, this and this and that and that. And it's like, well, if that's the case, if that much information ruins something for you because it didn't follow it to the T, then I don't want to dive into it, because, you know, that ruins it for me. But in this day and age, you know, movies with superheroes are becoming the norm now. So it's like, well, let's dive deeper into these characters and see what they're all about.
Well, I think one of the biggest things is that a lot of these major characters, their stories have been running for decades.
Right.
And what they started out to be is no more, or things have drastically changed.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of overwhelming to jump into that and understand, right, everything that comes with the character.
And it's interesting you say that, because when it comes to movies and TV shows, a lot of things have to change to fit the format for those platforms. So I think that's...
Well, and that's what causes a lot of the big changes and when it's adapted to film.
Right.
So there's some things that just cannot be shifted over into the film.
Correct.
That were in the comics.
Right.
Things have to change at times, and some people are not welcoming to
that
change. Interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. So I think what we wanted to do with our first episode was kind of dive into a lot of the terminology that gets used in comic book discussions.
Right.
They're not necessarily terminologies that are used in the comics themselves, but here on Nerdsplain It, there's going to be a lot of words that some people may be familiar with and some people may not necessarily be familiar with. So what we wanted to do here today with our first introductory episode is kind of do a little bit of a crash course.
All right.
In comic book terminology, you know, words and phrases and ideas that we're going to be alluding to a lot, especially as we go forward and we get character specific, when we get universe specific, whether it's, you know, strictly talking about DC's timeline or Marvel's timeline, that's where things get pretty muddy. They get real foggy. You don't really know where to go. And then when people are sitting here throwing jargon around, it can be a little intimidating, especially when most of these words are made up anyway.
Yes.
So let's go. What do you guys say? We go right there. Let's go right off the bat. Let's just knock it out of the park with discussing just baseline what continuity is in comic books.
All right.
So, Greg, as a newcomer, what does continuity mean to you?
For me, continuity means the same across the board in regards to story, I suppose. Make sure, like, for me, I guess it's cross-referencing information from one aspect to another, but making sure it all is cohesive along across the board, right?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right on track with that. Jess, did you want to add to that at all?
To me, it's just a consistent understanding of a character storyline. I mean, specifically if we're talking comics,
right,
it's the thing that everyone knows about a character.
Right, right.
Or a story.
So, for example,
Spider-Man's Batman's parents.
Right. Died. And I was going with Uncle
Ben.
Orphan. Right.
Like, that's pretty understandable.
Right.
Right.
The majority of iterations of a comic book character, the same background story has been consistent across the board.
Right. Yeah. You guys pretty much have it nailed down. Typically in comics and in comic book conversations, continuity is discussed a lot, especially when you guys were talking about the changes that get made from the comics, from the page to the film screen. Things get changed, and when people get really focused on continuity, they're really talking mostly about, okay, where did, you know, when this character started out, what was their origin story? Okay, what was their character based on? What were their ideas? What were the goals they were trying to accomplish? And you keep that even throughout their story, and then branching that even further to an entire publisher's line. Okay, those, you know, Batman, we all know he exists in the same world as Superman, as Green Lantern, as Green Arrow, as the Flash, as Wonder Woman. Okay, well, if he is in the same universe and you want them to be in stories together, you have to keep things, you have to keep the story straight. You have to keep things the same. If you have Batman, his parents died in his comic books. That was a spoiler for anybody who out there didn't know. and then he grows up, meets Wonder Woman, and in their stories together, they're having dinner with Bruce's parents. Bruce Wayne is Batman. Another spoiler for anyone who didn't know. That things don't add up. Things aren't even. And then we get conflicting ideas about the character. So, yeah, that's where we go with continuity.
So would you say that continuity is important in within the realm of the same universe, not specifically to the characters, it's, you know, themselves?
See, I'm really glad you asked that, because that ties into a term that I've kind of, or me and some friends have kind of coined, which is a headcanon. Continuity is also is another form of the word, is just what is canon in comics or in a story. Continuity is as important as the reader wants it to be. Like I just said, like the example I made with Batman's parents being dead in one story, but then alive in another. If that doesn't necessarily matter to the reader, okay, great. Then it doesn't necessarily have to be adhered to.
Right.
When it comes to headcanon, though, a reader can take stories that have been written. For example, the one of my favorite series that was done was in the early 2000s, started off by Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness, the Superman Batman run. I highly recommend anybody go pick that up if you're a fan of Superman, or if you're a fan of Batman, or if you're a fan of both. Definitely run and pick them up. Starts off with Superman Batman Public Enemies. The series ran for 5 years, 6 years. It went through different artists, it went through different writers throughout its run. But in the overall DC continuity, the stories that necessarily happened in that don't apply to the overall universe. However, they are some of my favorite stories. They don't show an adversarial relationship between Bruce and Clark. Clark Kent is Superman, for anybody who didn't know. That was another little spoiler. You're going to get a few of them to explain it. It shows those two. I mean, it's really a Superman Batman buddy cop series.
Okay.
And it really shows how close the two characters are. Yes, there is a dichotomy between them. They do things differently, but they have the same goal. But more to my point, those stories, whereas they don't necessarily apply to the DC universe as a whole, I like those stories so much, and I want those stories to be, when I think of those characters, those and how they relate to other characters and other people in the DC universe, I want that to be what I think of and how their characterization goes throughout. So in my mind, those are canon. Those are a part of the continuity. For some other people, they may not necessarily be so, but that's okay. That's why it can be really up to the reader what actually happened and what didn't.
So since we've touched on headcanon, we might as well go ahead and further explain that term and hit on what's canon.
Okay. Canon is, whatever the publisher decides is how the universe is set up. Like whether it's DC, whether it's Marvel, whether it's Image, Dark Horse, whatever. The publisher decides, okay, this is how our universe is laid out. These are the events that have happened. These are the characters that matter. This is how, I mean, even as far down as this is how old characters are. This is the things that have happened to them. This is the things that they have done. And this is what creates the characterization of the character. Some people will get into, you can get some heated debates over, you know, certain things that have happened in comics, and whether it's canon or not. Let's go back to Batman real quick as far as what is considered canon. Okay, so everybody knows that Batman does not kill people. Batman doesn't use guns. Batman doesn't shoot people. Batman doesn't do any of those things. What people don't necessarily, some people don't necessarily know, is that Batman's killed a lot of people.
Right.
Batman's killed a lot of people very intentionally. He used to carry pistols, he used to carry rifles. I mean, in his very first issue, he had firearms on him and he shot bad guys.
Wow.
But that is not considered canon anymore.
Okay.
You used to get a lot of really crazy Batman inventions, which is where the Adam West Batman TV show got Bat Shark Repellent.
I've heard about that.
But those crazy Batman comics were a lot more fun loving. And then, you know, in the 80s, when we got the true Dark Knight, which is when he really came, when that idea came about, the character really got overhauled and changed, and his canon changed where, he swore he never killed anybody, and that he was, you know, that's not what he did. That's not how he solved problems.
Okay.
So the killing got taken out of the canon.
Okay.
It did happen in the publication history, but that's not who the character is anymore.
So questions along the lines of the publisher. So say I created a comic book character, right? I am the creator of that character. I'm not going to publish it. I'm going to send it to a publication from them to publish it. So does that mean that the publisher now has the power to change what I've originally sought after for that character's background?
Yeah. Unfortunately, you then, I mean, depending on the agreement you make with the publisher and everything, you know, if you have any creative control, but I mean, look at what happened to Siegel and Schuster when they sold Superman to DC Comics. And when they sold Superman to DC, it was less than $200. They sold Superman for, and they still wrote stories. They were still involved, and they were still, you know, writing. They were still drawing the comics, and they still had creative control over it.
Okay.
But in the long run, I mean, okay, they're both you know, dead and gone. Rest their souls. But you know, obviously, they have no control over it anymore. And as the years passed on, the comic industry went this way and that way, and the publishers decided, okay, these are the stories that are getting written.
I'm wondering if what's canon is it generational? For example, the people from, you know, the generation of the 70s, like, because for me, I grew up with my comic book heroes in the 90s with, you know, the Batman the Animated Series, right? So Batman at the time, from what I remember, no, he didn't kill people. He wasn't that guy that did, you know, any means necessary kind of a thing. So do you think that depending on the era of when these characters were, I guess, formed, that their canon would kind of change depending on what was socially acceptable?
Oh, definitely. I'm gonna tag Jess in a little bit because she's our resident Wonder Woman aficionado, Wonder Woman expert. When Wonder Woman came about, Jess, correct me if I'm wrong, but her number one weakness, her kryptonite, was being tied up by men. And it wasn't like just tied up by anybody. It was, okay, if she was tied up by a man, she was powerless.
Yes. you are correct. That was a weakness of hers. Wow. I don't want to go too far into it and spoil upcoming episodes.
I think we could dive into it just to pick up Greg's question there as far as a generational difference in how stories are published. And how, okay, Wonder Woman went from the, you know, this mighty Amazon warrior who, okay, if she was tied up by as much as a ribbon by a man in the 50s and the 60s, and I think even earlier, she was powerless. But now in 2018, nobody messes with Wonder Woman.
Right.
Like, I mean, she goes toe-to-toe with Superman, and it's a bad day for Superman.
I mean, if you look at the evolution of feminism as it started, I mean, opening up that door and seeing into being bound, I mean, that was making a statement itself, and now it's more feminism has evolved.
And not to segue too deep into off topic, but that brings up another question. When it comes to comic book characters, are they kind of a world of how people wish society was kind of a thing? Like, That was their way of, hey, this is what's wrong in society, in comic book world. This is how we would rectify it, essentially, with these comic book heroes.
I do really like that question. Yes and no, really. It depends on the character. It depends on the story. I think. I mean, you look at some publishers will deal with real world events. I mean, the Spider-Man issue right after 9/11, they dealt with a very real world thing that was happening, and they say, I mean, and that issue didn't come out long after 9/11, and it dealt with Spider-Man dealing with that tragedy happening in his city. And I don't think it wasn't just Spider-Man. I mean, Marvel has umpteen heroes in New York City.
Damn.
And they were all dealing with that. And for some people, there was some catharsis there. Okay, you know, because a lot of people were wondering, okay, what do we do now? And for a lot of people from, you know, whether they're kids, teenagers, young adults, they've been reading these stories for however long, and they gain inspiration from these characters, they will turn to them and say, okay, well, I don't know what to do here. What did Spider-Man do? What did Superman do when things happened to him in his life? And they're able to kind of mold themselves into that. So publishers will definitely use real world things. I mean, it's how we got a lot of our, earliest stories. I mean, Captain America punching out Hitler is one of the most iconic covers there is in comics. It's beautifully drawn, and it's the red, white, and blue punching a Nazi in the face.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really awesome.
So yeah, I think they in some situations you definitely get real world, in a lot of situations you get a lot of real world things happening, a lot of early Aquaman stuff, or Silver Age Aquaman stuff. You had him directly dealing with whaling vessels and trying to stop poachers in the ocean, and when that was a big concern for people. I mean, not that it's not now, but I think but it's not as much. It's not on the forefront of a worldwide issue. So you don't have
right.
Aquaman attacking fishing boats anymore. I mean, they're trying to salvage that character into being a badass. Which, if you want to pick up some good Aquaman, for as bumpy as the New 52 was, when Geoff Johns started writing Aquaman for the New 52 right off the bat, it really showed a whole new Aquaman. Put a spotlight on a lot of the cool characteristics that were already there.
Right.
But people kind of gloss over, okay, he's just the guy in an orange shirt that talks to fish.
Right. Super Friends definitely didn't help that.
Super Friends didn't help much of anything. No, I mean, super, like, that's not Super Friends had a place.
Right.
There are certain cartoons or certain shows that I live and breathe comics every day, right. And there's
a level
stuff that I can't necessarily get into, but it has its place, and it has, I mean, there's fun to be had from it. I mean, like the Adam West Batman TV show,
right?
Not necessarily my cup of tea. That's not my Batman,
right?
But
as campy as it was, it still strikes, right? Exactly.
So I think this is a good time to step into retcon and explaining.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, in another term that is used is retcon, which R-E-T-C-O-N. I think there may be a hyphen in there. I don't know. I'm not an English major. again, it's another word that's just completely made up for the comic book community. But it's a term that it's a short term for retroactive continuity. It's when a writer changes something about the character, whether it's a fundamental thing about the character or it's just a little thing, to suit a current whatever story they're writing.
Okay.
Or it can be something that moves forward. It can be a retcon that sticks around for a really long time.
Okay.
Until someone changes it back. Like Greg, in the reading that you have done, have you ever come across any?
The only one that really comes to mind on the spot would be Superman. From what I heard, when Superman was first released, he wasn't as powerful as he is today. He didn't have flight. He didn't have certain abilities that he has. And then fast forward, I think they made him too strong. So then they changed how strong he was. And then he made him his one of his weaknesses, magic. Was that always a thing or no?
Funny thing, when it comes to Superman and his relationship with magic, in all the readings that I've done, he's really no weaker to magic than really anybody else is.
Okay.
I see that get brought up a lot of times, especially when he's doing otherworldly battles and adventures. I was just recently reading, it was a Final Crisis tie-in, Legion of Three Worlds, and he's going up against the Time Crud. What is the villain of that book? That'll come to me. But they call out and say, and he's fighting Mordru the wizard, and they're saying, oh, we know that magic is one of your biggest weaknesses. Magic is, especially when you're using high level comic book magics, it's everybody's weakness unless they are a magic user.
Gotcha.
But when it came to the development of his powers, yeah, you're definitely right there. His abilities weren't, being able to fly to different planets and everything. It was, the intro to the Max Fleischer cartoons was fairly accurate. He was faster than a speeding bullet.
Right.
Yes, he could run really fast. He could move really fast. He could leap a tall building in a single bound. Yeah,
right.
He could, those are things that he could do. But over time, as the stories got more grandiose, it was, it was his alien physiology, it gave him all of these abilities in early Superman stuff. I don't remember. I don't think they even acknowledged him as an alien.
Now hold up. Pause. Hold up. Now, when it comes to okay, like what you just said, right? His alien attributes of his being, right? Is that not all characters have this, but for Superman's sake, is that an excuse to being able to explain certain aspects of his abilities? Like, oh
absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. It is such a, I mean, and for our listeners out there, I am a Superman fanboy. Some people will knock me for it. Some people will pat me on the back for it. But I love the big blue Boy Scout. But the fact that, okay, his powers are given to him because the sun's a different color, essentially, when it really boils down to it, gives him all these things. And I mean, and even I get nauseated with a lot of there's the litany of powers that he had in the early 90s Man of Steel run before he died. Spoiler alert, Superman died in the 90s, listeners. But in the stories that were written, I'm trying to pull it off the shelf right now, the John Byrne stuff, it was, I mean, the art's great, the stories are really good. The problem that I always had was panel after panel, Superman is, you know, if he's flying over the city, he's telling the reader, okay, I can see, you know, I can use my microscopic vision and my X-ray vision and my cook the Pop-Tarts to the exact, you know, toastiness level vision. And it's panel after panel of that. And I think a lot of readers did get sick of that.
Gotcha.
You know, especially when we get super ventriloquism powers, or my favorite was always the Superman's power that he had. I think it was in the 70s in a couple of it popped up a couple of times. Superman was actually able to make miniature clones of himself come out of the tips of his fingers.
What?
And they were much miniature clones, and they had all of his abilities. So even those miniature clones could just perpetually make smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller Superman clones.
Wow.
It was absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, they do, from time to time, they'll either dial up of characters' abilities and powers, or they dial them back.
Now,
for example, I mean, Wonder Woman, you know, you're following a story along, and all of a sudden she's found a new power, and it's because the Greek gods are giving them to her as she needs them. So it kind of allows for that, that change. And okay, she doesn't have it,
right?
But now she needs, now she needs to fly. Like, right. Okay. So,
okay. I think the only ridiculous, I say ridiculous thing that I've seen, cause I didn't read much of the comic books, but movie wise, I believe it was the first Superman film or the second one with, General Zod and his crew. Where there was a scene in the movie where towards the end, when they were fighting in Superman's lair, I forget the name, Fortress of Solitude. Yeah, yay me. He takes his symbol off of his chest and he throws it at them. And I'm like, what ability is that?
the super cellophane S. We can have a whole I could go on for about a day and a half of how much that sequence alone just makes me mad. And it's actually right before that or right after that when they're actually in the Fortress of Solitude, and Superman is going to be in Zod and Non and Ursa, right, and Lois Lane standing there and Lex Luthor standing there, and then Superman is able to make like astral projection clones of himself all over the Fortress of Solitude, and then Zod's doing it, and Ursa's doing it, and not doing it, and they're playing this like guess which one's the real one,
correct?
And what Superman looks at Lois and says, "We played this game growing up in school, and I never was very good at it."
I do remember that. Yes.
And then like she goes to like touch him or something, and she and her hand goes right through him. And right there, I'm thinking, of course you were really bad at this game. Everyone you were playing with was dead. your planet blew up before you got to grade school. And if you were playing it with, you know, human children, you're a dick.
You know, it is 2018 now, and that thought process never even crossed my mind.
Yeah, I got that one real early on because I was really confused. Like, no, he came here as a baby,
right?
And all of his schoolyard friends, well, were ghosts.
So maybe,
so I guess that would put him in a disadvantage.
So maybe that was just the studio's way of showing the technology and what they were able to do back in the day. Maybe that's all that was for.
It was a director change that just ruined what could have. I mean, the Superman 2 listeners, the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2 is exponentially better. Don't watch the theatrical cut unless you just get a good laugh.
Oh, that was. Oh, so that was the theatrical cut. I thought that was the Richard Donner cut.
No, the Richard Donner cut doesn't have any of that.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that one's more true to story.
Right. A bit. Well, not as. Yes and no. It's not as ridiculous. Gotcha. Towards the end.
Okay.
But yeah, I like Jess's point where you know, Wonder Woman, she had in the comics for the longest time, you know, she had her invisible jet because, well, she couldn't fly. And then as we got into different stories, okay, nope, Greek gods were her parentage and her family members, so they were gifting her these powers and abilities, and then that just began, and over time it was like, no, Wonder Woman's always been able to fly. What else could she do? Supergirl has had a lot of different changes, and I think that kind of can segue us into another one of our pieces of lingo or jargon that we're going to use a lot and nerdsplain it, is the events that happen.
Okay.
In an event in comics is a big deal. DC has had quite a few of them. Marvel has had a lot of them. it's usually in those events where big changes happen. Okay. To a character. I'll just touch real quick on just some of the ones that DC has had that I can just rattle off. I mean, because they're big, you know, whole universe altering cataclysms and events that happen. You had in the 80s, you had Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was a story about a universe eating monster, and DC brought all these characters from all their different comics, and they were illustrating that, okay, you had some similar character, you had characters that were going on these different adventures, but they knew different people, or there were different, they were slightly different versions in these stories, and it was because, oh, they were from a completely different universe.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of sort of the character, but with little things changed. A big change that came out of, well, how many, I'm not going to dive into how many changes came out of Crisis on Infinite Earths, because it was innumerable at this point. Then after that, you had smaller events like Zero Hour in the early 90s, which universally is not necessarily looked at as very good. Years later, you had another big, big event in the 2000s. You had Infinite Crisis, which was DC kind of saying, oh, well, a lot of the changes that we stuck with for almost 20 years after Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, it's time for an update. It's time for us to change the game a little bit.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Quick question. So in terms of events, right? So would you, spoiler alert for anyone that hasn't seen Man of Steel, that whole destructive element that happened to planet Earth, would that be considered an event or something more along the lines of universal, like more than just involving Earth, like?
More than, yeah, it's more than just involving Earth, and it involves more than just one, two, or a handful of characters. When we say, when we're talking event, we're saying
something epic. Okay,
this story that's taking place is having an effect on every character, every title that particular company is publishing at the time.
Wow. Okay.
whether it's Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, all the way down to Blue Beetle and Booster Gold and whatnot, all of these characters are affected. Okay. And it's not just the main characters that you're used to reading, but it's these different versions of these characters that you may not have even heard of because, well, they were on quote unquote on in a different parallel dimension.
Gotcha.
That's now getting involved.
Okay.
Example of that is after Crisis on Infinite Earths, you had during that whole thing, you had Earth One Superman, which was the Superman that everyone had been reading for decades, and then you had Earth Two Superman, whose name was slightly different. His backstory was slightly different. He was a bit older. He was involved, came in and helped out to defeat this, the Anti-Monitor, the big universe eating.
Wow.
But not only that, but you had Earth 2 Supergirl, who was also Clark Kent's, Kal-El's cousin.
Okay.
She gets brought in, and then when they finally beat the universe eating monster, the Anti-Monitor, Earth 2 Supergirl is left in the Earth 1 universe, which already has a Supergirl, and there were physical differences as well as power differences.
Okay, so then when going back to continuity, is that one of the things though? Like you have Earth One and Earth Two, but just like Earth One, Kal-El has a cousin named Kara. So those mm-hmm. two were is that what you would say continuity would kind of play a part in all that?
Yeah. Continuity sometimes, like in situations like that, is continuity can just take a flying leap out the window.
Okay.
Because in those big events, they're either going to iron things out a little bit,
okay,
or they're going to crumple them up even worse. Okay. And it just depends on how well it's done. And not only how well that single story is handled, but how well they use that moving forward.
Okay.
With the stories that those characters are involved in. And sometimes it makes it easier for readers. Sometimes it clarifies things. Sometimes it makes it so much worse. But to more directly answer your point, no, as far as like the Earth getting attacked and all the devastation that happened on the page in the comics and the graphic novels, no, that wouldn't necessarily be considered an event. The events in the comics, they have far, like I think I said earlier, far-reaching effects that in a lot of cases fundamentally alter characters, and what they're used for is a refreshing point for a publisher. Marvel has done a lot of them. Most recently they did their whole Battle World stuff, and they've done, they did a whole new Civil War and stuff like that. DC's most recent ones that I think people would be familiar with would be Flashpoint and now Rebirth.
Okay.
They were both used as, okay, hey, let's hit the reset button and update some of these characters, or give give other characters some time in the sun. And I think definitely here in the future, with future Nerdsplanet episodes, we can definitely delve deeper into Marvel's whole timeline as far as when their characters really got together and developed a shared universe, or just a shared city, right, in Manhattan. But the stepping stones that those were for Marvel in character development, in character introduction, in how the characters related to one another, and the same thing with DC. We'll definitely do some episodes I think most of these events could warrant whole episodes in and of themselves. I don't think we'll necessarily do that. But like I said, the most recent ones DC had, Flashpoint and Rebirth. Flashpoint, just an example of some of the changes that had. We later learned that, okay, it made the characters much younger.
Right.
Like Batman was, they went right, excuse me, joking here. They made Batman, in his early 20s again. And he was just kind of starting out fresh, and he hadn't come across his his, you know, his iconic villains, right. and he didn't have those experiences. And then, you know, and it allowed us to see new villains that had never been thrown in there before, like the Court of Owls and in those types of stories. Superman was in Action Comics. Superman was, again, in his, you know, I think late 20s. He had been jumping around Metropolis and Smallville in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt,
right?
And had tucked a cape in the back of his shirt. While in the Superman books, it was 5 or 6 years later, and Superman was well established and everything. It just these events, they allow for readers to catch up, or they're a jumping on point for new readers that, you know, don't necessarily want to pick up books that are 20 years old. They want to see updated art. They want to see this stuff, but they still want to get classic stories out of these characters. But I think after we get some of these, the fundamentals of comics and nerdsplaining and how these kind of conversations go, we can really dive into and discuss and argue and throw things at each other and stand our ground on what was right and what was wrong, right, as far as what got changed.
Now, to add to that, now, would you say that retcons and events kind of go hand in hand with one another, depending on how big the event is? Because you have, like, it's going to be kind of hard to explain because of how they did this, but say X-Men in the Marvel cinematic universes, right, in the movies. It seems like Marvel kind of whore themselves out in terms of their character pieces. So Fox, they owned X-Men, they owned, you know, Fantastic Four. But then you have Disney and Marvel, where they have the universes with, you know, Iron Man, your Captain America's, your Thor's and stuff, right? But then you have these big, I guess, events, kind of like, what's the new movie coming out? Infinity War, right? So that's huge. But then you have characters like some of the X-Men members that should be a part of it, but they can't because of licensing agreements and such not, right?
Correct. The X-Men, the Fox and X-Men movies, they went ahead, you know, we got a film adaptation of a retcon is really what we got. It was the first time that I think that was really the first time that had happened.
Okay.
Was just the plot of the film was a retcon, and that was and we saw that happen with, they changed some things. Instead of having Kitty Pryde go back in time, we had Wolverine go back in time.
Gotcha.
You know, some things were changed because, well, Wolverine and his shirtless Hugh Jackman sells tickets.
Right.
I bought four. just anyway, that's a whole other episode in and of itself. And the reason that these different production companies have the movie rights they do is because, well, at one point in time, believe it or not, comics were not looked upon all that highly. Well, superhero movies weren't made. I mean, granted, in 1989, when Batman came out, it was the highest grossing film of that year, and it was kind of a flash to movie directors and production companies that, hey, superhero movies can work.
Right. And timing is definitely a factor in that too. I mean, that movie came out just in the right amount of time, I feel
it
like. Did.
Well, and there's so much in comics that, I'm sorry, you're going to need the technology to portray that in the right light.
Correct.
Right. So Marvel did what they felt they had to do at one point. They needed money. So what they did is they sold the film rights to Paramount and Fox and Sony.
Right.
It put some money under Marvel's roof and allowed them to stay in business. And we got Ang Lee's The Hulk.
Right.
I know quite a few people that actually do enjoy Ang Lee's The Hulk. And personally, I think there are some things about that movie that are enjoyable, not necessarily as a whole picture, but you know, that deal did get us the Incredible Hulk, and that movie was awesome.
Right.
Yeah, at the same time, we've seen, you know, we saw Fox fumble with the X-Men right up until Logan, really. I mean, X-Men 1, 2, and 3, they made a lot of money, they were received really well, and at the time, I think they were really blowing people out of the water because we hadn't seen anything like that. Done to that scope and with that amount of detail.
You know, and it's funny you say that because looking back at it now, those movies were terrible in the sense of the content. But like you said, we haven't seen any at that point in time, you know, while this is, you know, a cartoon action, you're seeing live action kind of a thing.
Well, it's we're like, seeing it out on film. And like I said earlier, you've got a comic book culture that is very exclusive for the most part. And that opened up some doors and allowed some people in that didn't know.
So then would you guys agree that back then, the effects of cinematography were more of the forefront than stories? So at the time, story didn't really matter, what was changed or whatnot. But now, since, you know, 2018, we've progressed. Let's get back more into the story. Yes, the technology is there. Okay, now let's focus more on the stories than just the graphics.
Yeah, I mean, I think we hit some origins, right. and that was interesting enough.
Right.
And I think that's kind of, you know, I mean, that was the starting point. And that grabbed people's attention and got them interested and got them excited. And now, yeah, we've hit the origins and more people have, you know, discovered comics and explored that.
Joined the bandwagon.
They knew, they saw the movies, right. They wanted more. And reading is how you get there. So, you know, we've got a lot of comic book fans now. Let's hit some good stories. Let's show that out on film.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, to a certain degree, that is. I mean, you're looking at, and I think the movie development companies have kind of steered in that direction, saying, okay, well, what stories have been done and in the comics, and let's try and put that to film. And I won't necessarily, and I, you know, when I'm having conversations about this, I look at it as a lot of these movies, they're inspired by the comics.
Okay.
They're not necessarily based on, because you look at a perfect example, Captain America Civil War.
Mm.
Captain America Civil War, the actual Marvel Civil War on in the comics, yeah, that was an event that had to do with everybody who, basically every superhero or mutant that was on Earth, or specifically in America, because in the comics they ratified the mutant registration, the Superhuman Registration Act, or whatever they called it, and that divided these big groups, you know, primarily the Avengers. But in that story on the page, you had the X-Men, you had the Fantastic Four, you had these other groups that were involved. Okay, the movie came, you know, they wanted to do the movie, doing it as a Captain America movie. You know, there's some American history tie in there. Okay, Captain America, Civil War, we can sell that.
Right.
And this is a movie that we can get a bunch of our characters on screen and progress our overall movie universe. Is it necessarily exactly how that story went on in the books? No,
right.
Because, well, Spider-Man wasn't involved to the extent that he was in the books. So you get it's inspired by and not necessarily based on.
Mm.
Like Logan is another – Logan, fantastically done – it was inspired by the Mark Millar. I'm saying that wrong. It was by the story Old Man Logan. The story Old Man Logan has Hulk involved, has Hawkeye, has the Spider Car. I mean, which was Spider-Man's hot rod that could drive along walls and stuff like that. You had the Hulk's family, which was, I mean, they were just giant redneck inbred Hulk.
That was a thing. I'm sorry, the Spider Car, that was a thing.
Well, if you look at toy lines,
that's what I'm referring to, because I remember that. I remember the toy line. Yeah. I was like, wait, that's not real, is it? That's an actual thing.
Oh no, it totally is a thing. Spider-Man had a car that could drive along buildings.
Wow.
And I think it had its own web shooters and stuff.
Honestly, like, I would prefer to sling webs than whip around.
Wow. All right.
Definitely. So yeah, it those events they happen in, you know, I'm glad we're actually seeing them happen in the movies. I mean, especially, you know, we've got the upcoming Infinity War movie, and then I think in a year or two we get Infinity Gauntlet, and as a movie, which is kind of interesting because in the comics the events went Infinity Gauntlet and then Infinity War.
Okay.
They flipped it for the movies. I couldn't even begin to explain why, but they're doing Infinity War and then Infinity Gauntlet. At least that's what they've announced at this point. Okay. And it looks like Disney and Marvel have tried to reach back out and collect more of their properties. I know there was a big dust up about that just within the past couple of months. I think they got some more of their characters back and can involve them if they so choose in those stories on film, which will be exciting. Definitely exciting to see when you've got 30, 40 characters that you've seen across different movies in different fashions. Now they're all together. Right. And that right there is what the events are in the comics. Okay. It's not just a handful of heroes. Like, it's not just the Justice League, which is a collection of, you know, mainly seven heroes. It's everybody. It's an all hands on deck situation because this bad guy is gonna destroy all of creation. Right. It's gonna destroy, you know, so everybody's got to get on board with it. At the same time, it's a narrative device to change the game a little bit.
Okay.
So like I said, with Flashpoint, it makes characters younger. It can, you know, characters that were possibly, you know, that were married or in a relationship. Okay, now they haven't even met yet. So we get to, in a new light, in a new generation, explore how those relationships and friendships and everything get developed. Smaller versions of events are crossovers, where you'll get, and crossovers happen all of the time. I mean, from one week to the next, you'll just, you know, the cover of an issue will be Green Lantern, also starring the Flash, and I mean, and then you get whole runs, which are Green Lantern and Green Arrow, or Green Lantern and the Flash, and it's months, if not years, of just, okay, it's just stories of those two working together, or the Superman Batman ones that I referenced earlier. Right. They're what that is. It's okay. Hey, there's a bad guy that's come across, or there's these situations have come across that one character can't necessarily handle on his own, but he picks up the super duper bat phone and hey, I need a tech boy in, and now the bad guy is screwed because I have to deal with both of us.
Wow. Okay.
So really, crossovers and events, they boil down to, okay, the power set that a villain is bringing to the table, is that too much for one hero right. to handle, or does it
take the whole shebang?
Exactly.
Okay.
So yeah, when we're talking about what in these different stories, different heroes got to deal with different things, and sometimes, you know, one bad guy is just too much for one hero to deal with. And then we get characters that come along that can handle more than one bad guy or a really extreme bad guy, but they got to go against the grain of what we think a superhero is, where we get that's where we get the term anti-hero from. It's characters like the Punisher, like Wolverine,
right.
like Spawn, like the list goes on and on and on. It's that superhero. He's the good guy, but he's breaking the good guy rules. He's more than happy to take the head off of a bad guy and post it on a stick outside in his front yard. A great example of that, the Punisher Max series from the early 2000s. I can't remember off the top of my head who necessarily wrote Punisher Max, but when Marvel decided to do their Max line, they recognized they had characters that could benefit from more adult oriented content, and they were, you know, they weren't sold to kids, they weren't advertised to kids anyway. They were geared towards adults. They were far more violent. The language was way more out there. They're good stories and they're good books for the right audience. And I think that's where.
So that's right. It sounds like to me, anti-hero would be dependent on the audience. Do you feel like an anti-hero would better suit a more mature audience, or a byproduct of how they go along fighting crime?
I think it's more that latter part, really.
Okay.
Because, I mean, some people consider Batman an anti-hero. And depending on the story, sure, if he's, you know, dislocating arms and breaking legs to get the information he needs, okay, you're not seeing a whole lot. I mean, Flash isn't out there, you know, throwing a guy into a dark room and when he walks out, they're a quivering mess.
Right.
Or, you know, he's not ripping a guy's arm off just to beat him to death with
right.
it. Anti-heroes, some of their stories, like I said, the Max series that they did, definitely all the stuff that that was done with Spawn. You know, he's a soldier of hell. So, yeah, you're getting a lot more violent and more mature content. That doesn't mean people, like, you know, younger people could get enjoyment out of them, but you know, the content isn't necessarily geared for them, and it could, you know, get scar them
right.
a bit. But anti-heroes definitely have their place, and they're a lot more fun to watch. I mean, like I said, I'm a big fan of the Big Blue Boy Scout. His methodology of getting to the bottom of a problem isn't always the best. Sometimes you need the brooding billionaire with daddy issues to scare the bejesus out of some. Sometimes you're in the Green Lantern stories. Okay, sometimes Hal Jordan using willpower to get the job done isn't going to do it. Sometimes you need to scare the crap out of them, and that's where, you know, a character like Sinestro, you know, is using a different skill set. And he, you know, for a long time, really could have been looked at as an anti-hero before he went straight villain.
So not necessarily by any means necessary, but it's more along the lines of, I might have to look at my bag of tricks to do what I need to get something done.
Right. It's that character that's willing to skirt that moral line of, you know, okay, am I just trying to get this situation solved and save the day? Or am I, you know, and I'm trying to make sure everyone makes that okay and put the bad guy in jail, versus, okay, I don't care if the bad guy goes to jail or is in a coffin.
Gotcha.
You know, yet, you know, Flash, Green Lantern, Superman, these the heroes that spend their time in the sun, they, you know, it's in, and they, and they're bright and they're colorful, and they're just trying to lock the bad guy up and make sure the kittens get out of the tree.
Gotcha.
That's not entertaining for everybody.
Right.
I mean, look at Green Arrow. Green Arrow prefers to do it that way, but there's stories where he's put an arrow between somebody's head, between their eyes.
Right.
You know, okay, it's what did that situation necessarily call for? Sometimes you'll see the really goody two shoes hero snap a little
right.
bit. Like Green Arrow was a good example. There was it was in the story Cry for Justice. I'm not going to spoil too much, but a family member of his is put in serious jeopardy by a villain, and when it all is said and done, Ollie finds him and makes sure that particular villain isn't hurting anyone ever again.
Oh.
And didn't care. He didn't care what his friends were going to say about it. He didn't care. If somebody comes across this body, okay, they'll know exactly who did it, but I did what I thought was right. Superman isn't necessarily blasting someone's head
right.
off just because they looked at Lois wrong.
Right.
Then again, you put your hands on Ma Kent, and he's going to tee off.
Right.
So there definitely are heroes that will skirt that line, but then there are like heroes like the Punisher, which is they're so far past that line. It's more important that the bad guys aren't drawing breath anymore, as opposed to eating prison food.
Right. Wow.
So
okay,
it just kind of it depends on where what the character is, who the character is. I mean, you know, Wonder Woman is a character that has all of the capabilities and the training in the world to kill somebody, but that's not her first go-to. That's not her plan is to go in there and kill and chop off Cheetah's head. It's no, I need to calm this girl down and get her back to normal.
Okay. So would you say that dependent on the character and if they're an anti-hero, their abilities would kind of play an important role in how they go about handling their tasks?
Oh, absolutely. You look at we'll step back over to the Punisher again. His background was military training, special forces, this, that, and the other. And okay, his family was murdered in front of him. He's going to use the skills that he has to accomplish his goal of making sure bad guys don't do that anymore. And the skill set he has is essentially hunting them. Batman, okay, he had the funds and the access to go around the world and be trained in martial arts and in psychology, right, and in theatrics. Okay, I'm going to use that skill set. Now, some of these villains that he deals with, okay, they're not going to be intimidated by a thump upside the head. Sometimes you got to break a kneecap. The Goody Two Shoes heroes aren't going to necessarily, you know, they're not doing it that way. So it's okay. That's not necessarily what a hero would be doing, is hospitalizing bad guys.
Oh, wow. The visual on that.
So really what that turns to is that you've got it's what the publishers are wanting to do. They're trying to appease different markets with different characters. And really the ones that we'll probably be dealing with here on Nerdsplain It are there's four real big ones out there that really matter: DC, Marvel, Dark Horse, and Image.
Okay.
Obviously the big two being Marvel and DC. They're the ones that have been around the longest. They're the ones that have survived. And even those two, and we're going to do episodes fully on, for the people who want that information of, okay, how did, you know, where did DC come from? What the hell does DC even stand for? Trivia, it stands for Detective Comics, which just really was Batman's comic for a long time. But before that, you had so many other smaller publishers that were bought up, and those characters just got absorbed in, you know, later on into the DC universe. And you've got Dark Horse and Image, and Image was just a publisher and a publishing company that was created by comic book creators who didn't want to work with Marvel and DC anymore. They were frustrated with them. They were tired of being hamstrung. Wow. The two biggest, Jim Lee was, he's now an executive with DC and everything. One of the, best artists in modern comics, really, in my opinion, the best artist. But then you got Image, created Spawn and Savage Dragon. That wasn't a joke. Savage Dragon's actually kind of cool sometimes.
Never even heard of him.
But you got a lot of these characters that got developed because they didn't want to, toe the company line as far as the big two were concerned. So you got some cool stories that were different than what the other guys were offering.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it really boiled down to the comic book creation process.
So I'm glad you brought up the comic book creation process. There's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot of roles. You start out with your writer who creates the story and writes out everything and creates all of those elements that are needed. That gets passed on to the penciler.
Okay.
Who sketches out the cells.
A storyboard.
Essentially a storyboard, but it's laying out. I mean, it's a rough sketch, right, for the most part. Then that gets passed on to an inker.
Okay.
Who can either do that directly. It's more common for it to be digital.
Gotcha.
So you scan that in and you're in, Illustrator inking the artwork that is then there.
So I guess that's the part where us as the readers see the finalized, draft or...
Yeah,
is that what we see in the comics?
Yeah, that's going to be the solid line work that you see in the comics. So
the inker doesn't color?
No. Sometimes. I mean, it depends. It depends on who's doing what jobs. I mean, you can have people that have multiple jobs in this process.
Okay.
So you have your inker who then colorizes it or sends it off to the person who is then in charge of coloring or digitally painting.
Oh, so like a colorist.
The world around it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then you've got your letter.
Okay.
Who...
That's a difficult word to say 5 times fast.
I'm not even going to try that one. But that then places in all of the dialogue.
Okay.
That the writer has.
So essentially like a script?
Yeah.
The conversation piece between the characters? Or is it also the action one as well? Like, for example, the 70s Batman? The pow, all that good stuff.
That that's oh, yeah. a lot of the, I mean, the sketcher will put that into a cell.
Okay.
So, you okay. know, that's part of then the artwork.
Okay.
So that's a little different than the lettering. We're specifically looking at, you know.
Like a script.
Yeah. I mean, so you've got your sound effects.
Your audible.
Right.
Yeah. That, like those little ones that come in, like, you know.
Like a grunt sound or
zip
something.
Or plop, or oh, okay. you know, it's not a full cell that's like the standard Batman pow or
oh,
bam.
Gotcha.
Like that would be the sketch artist would put that into a full cell.
Right.
But if it's just like literally just the letters that are like, hey, this is going on in this cell here. Here's a hint to what's, you know, what's then coming up. That's going to be your letterer.
Okay.
So
okay.
if it's just the words.
Well, doesn't the letterer also do like the thought bubbles and the word bubbles?
Yes,
and stuff
exactly.
Like that?
So okay. so you're putting okay. in your dialogue.
Okay.
Much.
Okay.
Right.
And then from there, you send it off to the editor who chops it up into tiny pieces.
And sends it
can
back.
Pretty much ruin everything.
Oh, wow.
It's been done before and you got to start over. But,
wow.
you know,
okay.
so that's the general process there.
Okay.
Yes. The culture can be exclusive in a way, but walk into a comic book store and talk to the person there working, because I can guarantee you they want your money and they're going to help you find something that you want to read or help you find a way to introduce yourself to even well-known characters like Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Green Lantern. I mean, just ask.
Right.
They're there to help
yeah,
you.
Definitely. Definitely. And if, you know, and that's, I think that's really what one of the big things that we at Nerdsplained are going to be here to do is going to be, you know, guiding people towards stories that they might like or characters that they might like. But you definitely made a great point there. Local comic book shops are the lifeblood of just comics in general. There are so many everywhere. I've been to so many in the St. Louis area. I frequent them basically weekly. I was down in Jefferson City, Missouri, a couple of months ago, and I just stumbled across one called the Antiquarium. It's a little place, but they've got a huge backlog of comics. Right. They get new comics in. They had a huge collection of statues, and I stood there and just talked with the owner for a little while he was doing bagging and boarding and stuff like that. And we were talking about this, that, and the other when it came to movie adaptations or characterizations. So definitely go to, you know, Google local comic book shops. And we at Nerdsplained It definitely want to know about your local comic book shops so other people in your area can find out about them. So if you have... if you have a place that you go to, whether you're down there in Tampa/Clearwater, Florida, or up here in St. Louis, or you're in Timbuktu, whatever, hop on our social medias. Let us know where you go to get your comics. Where do you go to get the good comic book conversations? Where have you found good stuff to buy? Where's got the good prices? Get us up on the Twitters and the... Okay, I'm going to be honest, folks. I'm social media inept. I can barely spell Facebook without So Jess handles all that. I'm going to let her tell you how to reach out to us. If you got questions, if you got comics, if you think my voice sounds terrible, just let us know. But Jess, where can people get in touch with us?
Well, we are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter with the same handle, Nerdsplained It.
All right, and I think that's going to do it for us on this one, this particular issue of Nerdsplained It. I've been House.
This is Greg.
This is Jess.
And we'll see you guys in the next issue. Thanks, guys.
See ya.